Sharon Varley, 8th of January 1963. Basically, there was just me and my sister, and my mum. My mum worked sometimes, she worked 16-hour days. I had an absolutely brilliant childhood, growing up and everything like that. Never felt like I missed out on anything, because my mum always made it special at weekends. Uncooked food, she took time out to, to play games with us, and create things. She was very creative. She could make things out of wood. I guess you'd call it whittling. But she just made everything. And it was just a really happy childhood. I never missed out on my father not being there. Because, as I told you before, my father was killed just before I was born. And we were always happy. Always happy. Didn't realise that my mum was actually sacrificing, you know, because we thought we were quite well off. But my mum always made sure that we had the best of everything. The biggest one that I can remember is when she worked at the brickworks, and the site had just moved over to the Winnie Hill site at the time. And I used to go to my nan's, who lived in Uncourt. My nan used to look after. She wasn't flesh and blood. She was just this elderly lady that my mum had known for years and years. And we called her Nana. And she looked after us. I used to walk down and go meet her. Or, on the odd occasion, we'd be in, I'd be in there with her, sat on a little stool on her machine and watching her work, which fascinated me at that young age. I'm proud to say that my mum actually fired the first brick at Winnie Hill. And she did all sorts of jobs in it, and it was basically a man's world. My mum ran a machine. She climbed on hoppers, and she did mix the clay with a stick, and moulded the bricks, took them down to the kilns, fired them. It's like things that trigger memories. It's like, if I smell oil, especially cat oil, it just brings all those memories back. I can smell the brickworks. Yeah, there were some days I didn't like it. I didn't get on very well with a certain PE teacher. We had until I was at the end of the third year, we had a love-hate relationship. I couldn't stand being in a company. Probably because I was gobby, you know, and I wouldn't take it sitting down. But it was at the end of the third year, she actually came up to me and said, "I think our feud's gone on long enough." And from that moment on, we got on. But I think that was the only... I mean, I liked PE. I just didn't like her. But as far as the rest of school were concerned, yeah, I enjoyed myself at school. You know, I did the odd truancy. I think, like, most of them have done, like, bunked a day off school. But my favourite subjects were history and English. And I excelled in those two, mainly because of the interest in it. Yes, when I was in sixth form, we had extensive careers advice, and we all sorts of like sessions where they'd show us things, and I did know quite a few people. I mean, we had a family friend, and she was a lawyer, and all the television programs that I'd watched, all lawyers were male. So it's like I thought, wow, then, a woman. And we had some well, a relative of mine was head of their own business, which was quite unheard of in early 70s. My main love, I wanted to be a successful singer in a band, and it was a dream I had from when I were a child. And I formed a band. We started going places, and then I just gave it up. The dream died. BS Bandit, which stood for Big Soul Bandit. Oh, I was more interested in the music, so instead of going to college right away after I left sixth form, I went on to my band, rehearsing, singing in pubs and clubs, and then, like I said, the dream just died on me. I still like to sing, but it's not as good now. I've ruined my voice, blah blah blah, like with smoking and whatnot. It was a big pull, because I thought I would, with this dream, overnight sensation, get rich quick. But it doesn't happen like that in reality. Yeah, she was happy with me. She allowed us to grow up, to make our own mistakes, to be there when we fell. And she encouraged me in that, but she also encouraged me to carry on with my education as well, for something to fall back on. I was 18 when I left school. The first job, fully paid job, was a work experience I did for 6 months at Tesco's. And my first wage was £23.50, which probably won't buy you a bag of spuds and a loaf of bread nowadays. Most of my wage went towards travel to music venues and buying records, music sheets for the group and everything. Just, that's where the biggest part of my money went. I weren't interested in the drinking side of anything at that time. The places where I bought music, where I bought music sheets and everything, was Music Box on Abbey Street, or Reedy's Music in Blackburn. Used to get a lot from there. Where I used to go and listen to music, it was like just going to local disco setups. They weren't real clubs or anything. They were just like community halls where they put weekend discos on and whatnot. That's where I listened to soul music, where I knew where to go venues. The only club that I actually went to, and I was underage, was Wigan Casino, in my mate's brother's van. He used to take us all. It was like memories of that come flooding back. So we used to go to club, you know, like dressed but casual, because it was like we wanted to dance. That's what we wanted to dance. So it was no good with high heels and old makeup on and everything. You just wanted to dance. And we had like quilts in the back of the van, so that if we got tired, we could put our head down for a bit. Because it used to start at 8, and it used to finish at 8 the following morning, so it was like all-nighters. But with very rare, I came outside to the van, because I was just buzzing off the music. And they were sort of like, I don't know, I would just say it's just a part of my life that I wish I could relive, but my youth. But I think that's everybody's dream, isn't it? Sticks in your mind. It's like I call music and my better memories. They can evoke more memories than any photograph. You know, I'll just play a tune and I can remember exactly where I were when I first heard it. What are we doing? Who are we with? Oh, goosebumps, hair raising. Treated like one of them. So I did. It was like a month in each department. I worked in prep room, which was preparing all the meats and everything, you know, taking it from the bone. Also, it's right from doing that to labelling it up and putting it in the freezers. Warehouse, I enjoyed it more at warehouse, because that was with taking deliveries, sorting them out in the warehouse, clearing the warehouse, just being in charge of stock upstairs. That was real. It was good fun with that. But I've never been, we were never treated any different. You know, well, the only difference being I was a newbie, so, you know, it was like teaching me how to do things, but I never felt uncomfortable. The odd comment too, you know, are you sure you know what you're doing? You know, I can't see a woman knowing how to take windscreen wipers off, which they were so easy, you know, and trying to tell somebody that they were putting petrol in the oil, in the oil pipe, and that was the only real nasty answer I got was, what would you know, you're just a woman, you know. But he poured petrol into his oil container, you know, which it should have gone into the petrol side. I just laughed. I laughed at it because there was actually a gentleman in the just in the kiosk that was trying to tell him the same. And, you know, and he backed me up. He says, this is the lady's right. You know, just look what you're doing. You know, he ignored both of us, drove off down the road. And then I think his van, well, I don't think it broke down. I think it stopped because he needed petrol. But he didn't come back to the garage to ring for emergency services. He went right past. And I was just laughing. I just laughed every time I saw him. A bunch of mates. And we all liked doing one thing or another. Where gardening were concerned. So we decided to form landscape gardening. And we got quite a bit done. Was working with a local housing firm, like mowing the grass, doing the gardens and everything. And then we had to fold because the lad decided to disappear with all our tools and the van. So, and we couldn't afford to replace them. So that was the end of it. About 2 years I did that. Oh yeah, we knew exactly where he went. He went down south. He was from down south anyway. And that's where he disappeared to. But, you know, like, apart from getting a detective on it and everything like that, it was just one of life's learning curves. I remember the big thing about equal pay, the big call out, because that was the only thing. I mean, I used to discuss it with my mum, because that was the only thing my mum did, what was termed a man's job, but she was paid less. You know, like you'd probably say your weekly wage was roughly £20 less than what the man were getting. And sometimes the men weren't doing as much as my mum. Or on the harder side. So I think I looked into that, and that's when I started looking at work rights and things. Yeah, when I applied, went for the job and got the job interview, they automatically presumed I'd gone for 6-2 or 2-10 shift. And I went, no, I've gone for nights. And obviously, they didn't laugh, they didn't say anything, they said, oh, right. So I started on nights, and there had been a woman that had been on, but she only lasted a night and a half. So what I didn't know was they were actually monitoring me to see how I got on, to see how everything happened, because they wanted to make it equal across the board. And it can't be equal if there's one lot that it's just men only. So they wanted to see how I settled in. And I settled in rights, and then within 6 months of me working nights, my mate on 6-2 transferred to nights, and then women just started appearing left, right and centre. And it was a fairly 50-50 balance then. So I led the way, so to speak. I molded parts for cars, like the grill, you know, like the grill that's at the front of Land Rover. That was one. Wing mirrors, gearboxes, you name it. It was plastic mouldings, injection mouldings. You have to have a good sense of humour. And you can't go in thinking you lady muck or anything like that, because it's so, night shift is so different from any other shift. It's a lot more laid back, because, well, I think mainly because there's no senior management around. So, but you've got to be able to take a joke, you've got to be able to take the banter. Whether you're male or female, it doesn't matter which end, you know, it's a totally different outlook on nights than it is on a day shift. It's been construed as sexual harassment, with somebody just putting their arm around you. In some ways, I think, yeah, this, you know, like sexual harassment at work. I mean, I have never experienced it myself, but I do know of people that have. But in the ways that they were experiencing it, and the ways that I saw, it was just friendly banter. There was nothing untoward. There was nothing sexual about it. It was just friendly banter. And an arm around somebody's shoulder isn't sexual harassment. I mean, we did have one quality control who, he actually thought he were a James Bond figure. only used to be, try to act so suave and sophisticated, and he made himself look a clown all the time anyway. But he'd pat your backside, but we'd just turn around and slap him when he did it. You know, so it's like, we got our own back. It wasn't, nothing was carried on. Although as union, when I became head at union, there was one girl that took one of the bosses for sexual harassment, and it was turned out he wasn't sexually harassing her. They'd been seeing each other for a few months, and then he suddenly said, look, it's going nowhere. And she was just a woman scorned, so she just said he was sexually harassing her. But it took a long time, did that, to actually go through, because obviously we'd get information. You know, it couldn't be just, she said it happened, he said it didn't. We had to investigate, but that's what that turned out to be. She moved on to another shift. He stayed on nights, and I think they ended up getting back together again anyway. You know, so it was like wasted all that paperwork for nothing. That's how it was resolved in the end. There's a fine line. There's a fine line that you can cross. And if you cross it, yeah, you're going too far. And just a way of actually saying it, or the slap across the chops, takes them back behind that fine line. But there are the cases that I've seen in the news, some of them are horrible. And you're meant to feel like you should do that, or you won't get anywhere. You know, and it's like, do me a favour and I'll do you a favour. And that sort of behaviour shouldn't go on. But, like I said, it's a fine line. There's a pat, and there's a pat. You know, like grabbing somebody and groping. Now that's sexual harassment. But just a friendly tap. These are days gone by. Today, I don't think they'd take it like that. There's far too many cases, I think, that actually come and they take them to a tribunal when it's just been innocent banter. But it's the tribunal, it's going to the tribunal that takes it further than what it should have gone. They brought in, the company had sold, so they wanted a big shake-up. So they brought in a management consultant team, and then they had these three managers that knew nothing about plastics, which we'd told them, you know. And then it turned out two of them were all right, but one, he wouldn't even venture outside his office. And, because I were at union, he used to ask me, what's going on out there? And the only time I answered him were, well, it's that time of year again, the dangling carrot. You know, take this lower pay offer, or you get nothing, and it's coming up to Christmas, people would take it. And I just said to him, if you really want to know, get out there and mingle with the people. I says, you'll gain more respect that way. But he wanted to see the back of me, because I've never been a yes man, and I wouldn't bow down to him, and I wouldn't tell tales, and I wouldn't do anything. And I argued with him. I told him, to get his fat ass out of his chair and get outside on that church shop floor. And he threatened me. He said, I'll sit the back of you. And I wanted him to put it in writing, and he wouldn't. Then he says he'd see me down the road. And I said, just say it in front of somebody, so that I've got a witness. And he wouldn't. I called him a chicken shit. But he did sack me. And I took him for unfair dismissal. And won. He just wanted to see the back of me because I couldn't stand him. I didn't like him at all, and I let it know that I didn't like him. What he wanted, he had a little team around him that was sort of like bowing down, yes, 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 Mike, yes, 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 I'll be there, you know. And I just went, I've never bowed down, I've never done any creeping, you know, to get into positions that I've got into, you know, I'm not going to start now. And I just told him straight. Oh, I went back to Rhys Wyers for a stint just before they folded. Just went back there for a few months, and then I got a job at another garage, another petrol site, and worked my way up to manager. And in that time, I worked bars. Eventually becoming a relief steward in one of the local clubs to where I am now. I am a porter on a market, on Accrington Market. 17 years I've worked for the council, and I've seen a lot of changes, mainly the way people shop. Changes in the Starlet Market, changes in people's attitude. Used to have such and feel such a caring atmosphere years ago. Everybody looked out for each other, but it just doesn't seem to be that now. That's the change in attitude, I see. I mean, not everybody, but it's just that general feel. And it's how things are being cut back. Shopping trends change, so you haven't got the same people or the next generation coming up and doing the shopping, because the next generation are your online shoppers anyway. Well, there used to be one time, every single stall on the market was full, and there was a waiting list of people to actually come on the market. To now, it's like, I mean, can't go through this COVID at the moment because it's only essentials that are open, but to now, we've got about 12 and 20 people on outside, and no waiting list. And it's the workforce as well. I mean, we're down to three full-time porters and a part-time, to where when we had that market like that, there were 11 porters. So that kind of trend, we're still expected to do the same amount of work, if you will, but there's less people. I never really experienced any hardship or anything. If there was a position available and I wanted to go to that position, I'd just apply. And I never got any knockbacks. So I don't say we're lucky. But I still think it's hard for women in the workforce. They've got to work twice as hard to prove themselves. Especially when you're going for a, should we say, a managerial position. always it always seems to fall favourably on the male side. But even in my line of work now, I haven't come across that. Everybody has an equal opportunity to go for jobs. I've had interviews. It's just somebody's been a little bit more qualified than me, so obviously you're going to give it to somebody that's more qualified. There has been a couple of occasions when I've turned round, but it hasn't been from my work colleagues or anything. It's more been outsiders thinking, oh, women shouldn't be doing that. Women should. So I've turned round and I thought, hell yeah. You know, I'll do it. And I have proved myself that way, but I've been lucky with the guys that I work with. They turn around and they've even said, you don't, there's nothing to prove. You don't need to prove anything. You know, we know that you can do just as much as us, in fact, more. I don't know. If I had the same feelings towards work as I have today, no. Because I wanted to be hands-on. When I went to college, I actually wanted to go to probation service. But then I didn't like the idea of being sat behind a desk all the time. I wanted to be outside. I choose an easier job. But I'm only saying that because of my age anyway. But no, this kind of job, it's kept me fit. You know, I don't go into work every day going, oh, I love being here. You know, there are days when I think, oh, come on, roll on 6 o'clock, I want to go home. But I do enjoy the job because there's no work and there's no other job that I could get where I could have a gossip with people but still be doing my work. It's like I've always had a team. Or, you know, like a group of colleagues who are all doing the same. I've never been working alone, if you will. There's always somebody to bounce back on. Or bounce off from. You know, always somebody there that backs you up. And I quite like that. We have a good comradeship. Amongst us as well. We back each other up, so I like that feeling.